Canadian Economics. Thank you again for joining me. Today is November 6, 2013. And if you happen to catch our last podcast, we went over some of the bigger picture items, you know, explaining the situation that the Fed's in, why there's this constant debate of tapering. Is the Fed going to taper? Are they going to stop printing? And really mapping out how it comes down to a very simple dynamic where the Fed has two choices, which is either A, they continue to print to prop up the markets the way they are, which will never lead to a recovery, or B, if they stop printing and the government allowed things to fall, which is what would happen in the short term, this would actually be the better outcome, because the sooner you stop printing and trying to distort markets in all sorts of various ways, the sooner you can actually begin to allow a real recovery to happen. Now, of course, for anyone who's at all familiar with Washington, the Congress, the administration, and the Federal Reserve, you know that usually whichever is the worst outcome is the one that they will choose, which has helped to form, certainly in 2013 and the last couple of years as well. But we did promise in this last podcast that we'd follow things up and actually get into a little bit more of the solution so that you don't end up feeling a little bit overwhelmed and thinking that there aren't solutions, because that is not the case. And in fact, for all these challenges, there is something that can be done. And again, I'd really like to commend you on the fact that you're taking the time out of your day to listen to something like this and find out what you can do about it. I don't want to belabor this point, but I think it's so important that, like many things in life, where most people get stuck is that, you know, they dig into something, they learn a little bit about it, and this isn't just finance, but can be any topic, and often something can seem a little overwhelming at the beginning and people stop and give up. And really, at least from the financial market perspective, that's about the easiest way to make sure that the next time Wall Street has some meltdown that you are one of the victims. So the fact that you've tuned in today, and we're going to go over some more strategies and thinking about what you can do to respond, again, that it's really, I don't know how else to say, but it's great that you've taken the step to do this. And that is actually the biggest step. You'll find that the learning curve as you go along, fortunately, becomes pretty exponential. And, you know, in a short period of time, if you continue listening to our podcast, or if you're out there finding other good sources of information, it's exciting because you'll see that in a very short period of time, you can have a good understanding of what's going on, what to do about it, and, you know, at some point, you'll turn on some of the financial channels, and you'll think, geez, how are these guys missing this? It seems so logical, and, you know, then it starts to make a little more sense why everyone has this particular perspective that they seem to do, which is just, hey, let's print and borrow more and wait for things to be okay. That's just what everybody's always grown up thinking is the way. Well, at one point we found out the earth wasn't flat, and maybe it takes a little while for people to recognize it, but the good news is that you're going to be ahead of that curve. You already are ahead of that curve. I want to congratulate you again on that. And with that said, let's think a little more about, now that we have some understanding of what's going on, you know, what do we do about it? So let's begin from an investment perspective. Now, something that many of you have heard is that in times of economic chaos or whenever there's a crisis, people say, well, let's go to the safe haven, the flight to safety. And when they say this, usually what they're referring to is the U.S. dollars and treasuries. Now, for anyone who's been following the U.S. dollar treasury market, in terms of U.S. dollars, well, what's going on in that market? The Fed's printing $85 billion with a B, not million. Well, not trillion yet, who knows. But at the moment, billion with a B, and I like to point out that $85 billion per month does equate to over $1 trillion on an annualized basis. So basically, there's going to be an extra $1 trillion in the monetary supply throughout, if you look at the beginning of 2013 and then to the end, you're going to have $1 trillion more dollars than you did. So from simple supply and demand, there's going to be more dollars printed. The value of it goes down. Now, of course, this doesn't even factor in what they're going to print. This just is looking at what we already know has been printed, what people are expecting them to print already. In either case, there's a lot of dollars being printed. Now, this actually hasn't really been reflected in the market yet, which is the interesting thing, because what you're seeing really is that the degree to which people still are so ingrained with the idea of the dollar being the safe haven asset. Hey, when things are getting chaotic, what I want? Money in the bank. What is money in the bank? People are putting dollars in the bank. Why that's so dangerous is because now people think they have money safely in the bank and the money is losing its value. You can think of it, it's really, and that's why inflation is often referred to as a tax. Because if you have $100 in the bank and it loses 10% of its value, it's really no different than if you're being taxed by 10%. In either case, if you're sitting there holding dollars and the supply is being increased, that means that the dollar is going to go down in value. Now, it hasn't been a normal, rational market, and in these types of situations, it's usually not. But what eventually happens is that you reach some sort of break point, and then it will be revalued very quickly. It actually reminds me of a funny story that Peter Schiff had in one of his first books, Crash Proof, where he talked about comparing the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve to the canary in a coal mine, where the canary is standing there, flying on its side. I mean, the thing's looking up at the sky, hasn't moved in weeks. Everyone's passing by thinking, well, maybe he's just taking a nap or bird watching or looking at the sky or whatever it may be. Hey, the signs are there. And, well, certainly, I wish I could tell you the exact timing of when something like that gets resolved, but what we do know is that the supply of dollars are being increased. And if there's any rationality returns to the markets at some point, it's going to be a rude awakening for the people who are left holding the dollars. Now, another one of these so-called safe haven assets is the treasury market. Now, let's think about this one for a minute. When there are signs of chaos, which we saw very recently with the debt ceiling, we saw earlier this year with the fiscal cliff, and it seems like one of these offshoots of the U.S. insolvency pops up every couple of months now. Treasuries are promised to receive dollars at a later point in time. So if you go from the standpoint that holding dollars is risky because they're going to print more and the value is going to go down, well, then that makes the treasury even riskier because at least if you hold the dollars now, you have the chance to exit that position. Maybe you say, I'm going to trade my dollars for gold or silver or real estate or a natural resource, and then you no longer have the exposure to the dollars. A treasury is a promise for the U.S. government to repay those dollars at a later point in time. So if the dollar is going to lose its value, well, now you're getting your dollars back after they've lost their value. So it's kind of like if the dollar is bad, then the treasury is even worse. And of course, that doesn't even factor in whether they're going to actually repay you or not, which for anyone who sat and followed it all with the last debt ceiling or any of these or any of the debt ceilings, I mean, I think the last I checked, they've increased it the last 74 times it's come up. I mean, it's to the point, why do you have a debt ceiling limit if every time you hit it, you just raise it? It kind of defeats the purpose. So you're counting on the U.S. government to repay this money, and Again, all I can say is look at what you've seen. Look at the way Congress operates. Look at the way the White House operates. And I try to keep these from getting political because that's not my goal. But to the degree that the political policy is so influential in the markets, it does have a huge impact. But again, it's not really a matter of Bush, Obama, Romney, because they're all essentially running the same policies. Hey, if the market's weak, if there's a debt crisis, we need to spend more. More stimulus, more spending, more money printing. The names change, the story stays the same. So that's the question that comes down to each person. Again, my goal isn't to tell you what to do. I can give you the information. I think the best way for every person to go about this is that the more you understand, then you need to decide what makes sense to you. If you look at Congress and think, well, these guys are running a tight ship, you know, this is the type of business I'd like to be invested in, think of it as a business. If someone came to you and said, here's my business plan, this is how I run it, and they showed you the video of Congress, is that a group that you would say, all right, I'm lending you my money and I think I'm going to get it back? From my perspective, it seems like a pretty dicey deal to me. And then you factor in that even if you do get your money back, it's going to be worth a lot less by the time you get it back. And it's almost laughable that the Treasury is still considered the safe haven. I mean, it's, if you tried to think of what's the dangerous haven, you couldn't get much worse than the Treasury. So here it is, your two traditional safe haven assets have really become anything but. Now, of course, the way Wall Street works is that there's a conventional wisdom and everybody seems to read off the same script, and the conventional wisdom says if things are dicey, buy dollars in treasuries. Even when it was the debt ceiling talking about the insolvency of the U.S. government and how the only way that they're going to repay any of this money is by printing more, people are still saying, well, this is the safe haven. So it doesn't seem like really much of a safe haven to me, and that's why I've steered cleared, and it seems like a pretty dangerous place to be putting your money. So now that you've heard the places where you might not want to put it, what is the answer to that? And that's why you continue to hear so much about gold and silver, with the simple reason being that these are the assets that they cannot print. Gold is a currency. Its advantage against the dollar, against the yen, against the yuan, is that it cannot be printed. You know that this is the supply. Yes, there is a certain amount that's mined from the ground each year, but on a percentage basis, it's relatively small to the amount of gold that's outstanding, and it's priced in that we know that there's a certain amount of supply that comes out of the ground, and there's also a certain demand of consumption of amount that gold and silver that people buy each year. But you cannot say, well, we're going to print $85 billion each month of gold. You can't do that with silver. And if the same type of behavior continues and you just keep printing, these are going to be the natural beneficiaries. That's why the best thing during inflationary periods of time has historically been resources, things that are real, whether it's gold or silver serving as money, or if you look at oil, or the things that when prices are going up and the condition of living is coming down, coffee, orange juice, what are the things that people are going to have no matter what? Well, maybe you will or won't still buy an iPad, but you're pretty sure going to be eating breakfast or eating a meal at some point in the day. Real estate is another one where, now, this is a little trickier just because the government's been so involved in the real estate market and it's still pretty distorted. As much as real estate has fallen, especially in 2008, 2009, We know that real estate is still somewhat artificially high in its price level, and the way that we can know that is because the government is still intervening in the market. The Federal Reserve buying the mortgage-backed securities each month. There's been less regulatory and fiscal intervention in the real estate market in these past couple of years, but if you go back to 2009, I think it was, where they were giving out home buyer credits and all these things, which was more printed government money propping the value up. They didn't want it to fall. They did these things specifically so the value wouldn't fall. And they're still doing some of them, more on the Federal Reserve monetary side. So we know by default that, well, if they stop doing this, then the price is going to be somewhat lower. I would argue that if the Fed wasn't buying many of these bonds, the prices would crash because going back to 2008, we saw that there were no buyers for these things, and it was only until the Fed started buying them that the market stabilized. Now, there's a couple of ways of looking at that. You could say, well, that's what they should do to stabilize the market, or if something is worthless, maybe we should all look at reality and agree that, hey, this is worthless. Let's stop trying to pretend it's otherwise. Now, that's another debate, but what we can see is that the real estate market gets a little quirkier just because there's so much at play. Now, on the positive side, the real estate represents a real asset. If you have a house or if you have a property, hey, well, regardless of what the Fed does or what the value of the dollar is, there's value in that. If you own a place to live where you can go and sleep, that's one of the basic requirements or necessities. And in extremely inflationary periods, which it appears we are headed towards, well, not headed towards, we're already in. Now, we haven't seen the extreme price increases, but it's worth noting that really there's the word inflation is not referring to the price increase because you can't inflate prices. You inflate the supply of money, and the price increase is the result of that. And often people will say, well, we need to fight inflation when they're referring to the price increase. You can't fight rising prices. What you can fight or do something about is address the cause of the rising prices, which is the inflation of the money supply. So now that's a small, minor technical point, but again, I don't think that we've really seen, for a variety of reasons, the real impact of all the money that's been printed yet, because a lot of it is still being exported abroad. China's sending products here. What are we sending? We're sending dollars. So other places are exporting products to the US. The US is exporting inflation. Now, at some point, if people lose faith in the dollar, that's when all these dollars start flooding back to the US. If China's sitting there with $1.3 trillion of treasuries and they say, we got to take anything we can get for these because these things are worthless, that's the point at which now anything that's not nailed down in the US gets gobbled up pretty quickly. And again, this is why, whether it's real estate, natural resources, again, gold and silver being two of the really if the two primary beneficiaries of this type of environment, and the fact that it hasn't yet been reflected means that fortunately it's not too late to do something about it, but you continue what the US is doing for long enough, and you are going to have a break in the dollar and treasury markets. I actually remain a bit surprised that we haven't seen it already. And a lot of people always wonder what is the timing going to be? That's the one thing that nobody ever knows. There were a lot of people who saw what was happening in the real estate market in the past decade, but no one really knew for sure when it was going to break. But just that it was, and I think that that's really a good analogy to draw back to. And fortunately, we don't have to know exactly when it's going to break. And that's the way markets work. You don't always get, all right, well, the dollar is going to drop tomorrow, gold's going to go up tomorrow. But it's always better to be a little bit early rather than a little bit late. And again, It really comes down to how do you see the overview of this situation? What do you think is going to happen? The response from the Federal Reserve, the response from the government. Again, you don't have to agree with everything I said, and you can disagree with the things I said. That's fine. And in fact, my main point is to introduce to you the information that you're not seeing if you watch CNBC, if you watch Bloomberg. This is the same information that I studied after the housing crisis by the same people that saw it in advance and were able to avoid the pain the last time. And when you start seeing these things that is not talked about in the mainstream media, then you quickly, which is the exciting part, begin to see how it might unfold this time. Is it unfortunate of the way that the market is going and what the government and the Fed is doing? Sure. But one of the things that I think is so valuable about trading or investing is it points out very clearly that there's a difference between what should happen or what might be fair and what is going to happen. Now, it's important to know and understand both and integrate the two, and that's when you end up with a better outcome, and which is exactly what we're doing here. And again, it starts with understanding what's happened, where we're headed, and hopefully after today's podcast, you have a better idea of some of the major asset classes, the dollar, the treasuries, and then being some of the ones that will struggle in this type of environment. And now looking at gold, natural resources, real estate, and some of the asset classes that we might expect to do better and hold their value through a period of great price increase, great inflation of the monetary supply. Let these things sink in. They're not as confusing as everyone has told you your entire life that they need to be. We write a lot about this on arcadiaeconomics.com, so you can sort through, and I know a lot of people it helps to read in addition to hearing these things. You don't have to solve it overnight, but as you begin to just understand in pieces really how it all fits together, it will start to make sense. And if you're finding this helpful, subscribe to the podcast. Visit us at arcadiaeconomics.com. There's also a Facebook and Twitter page and all that good stuff, so we'd love to hear from you there. And until then, I'd just like to wish you all a successful and profitable day, and we'll see you again soon. Thanks.